It's time for Senior Talk with Carol Higgins Taylor, a show designed with seniors in mind. Carol discusses everything from Social Security to senior housing, medication to Medicare, and so much more. And now, your award-winning host, Carol Higgins Taylor.
Hi, and thank you for joining me today for this edition of Senior Talk. We're discussing a risky mix, seniors and alcohol. Time to Ask is an initiative developed by Lunder Dineen, the Health Education Alliance of Maine. Their tagline is health education is powerful medicine, and that is so true. They offer free, easily accessible, and evidence-based education to Maine healthcare professionals and the communities that they serve. This is done through an innovative partnership with Mass General and an ongoing collaboration with Maine's healthcare community. The goal is to improve the overall health of Maine residents by expanding their knowledge and this is critical, by advancing the skills and expertise of Maine health professionals. So they're collaborating with experts from all across Maine to develop an initiative called Time to Ask. And Time to Ask's mission is to empower healthcare professionals with knowledge, skills, and attitudes that they need to really talk with patients and families about the impacts of alcohol use so that patients can make informed decisions. My guests today are Stephanie Nichols, PharmaD. She is an associate professor of pharmacy at Husson University, adjunct clinical assistant professor of psychiatry at Tufts University. I have Lindsay Smith, PhD, MSW, research associate, Cutler Institute for Health and Social Policy, Muskie School of Public Service, University of Southern Maine, and the incomparable Dr. Len Kay, who is director of social work, PhD, director of and director of University of Maine Center on Aging and professor, University of Maine School of Social Work. There is a lot of knowledge in the house. Thank you all. Thank you, Lindsay and Stephanie, for calling in. Len, thank you for being in the studio. So let's get started. Time to Ask. This is a really critical. Alcohol plays a really critical role in adult Mainers, I think. And so what is, Stephanie, I'll start with you, Time to Ask. Or Lindsay, whoever feels comfortable.
Lindsay, do you want to take this one? Sure, I will. So Time to Ask is an initiative that's really been responsive to the research that's out there related to the importance of brief intervention and regular conversations with individuals about their alcohol use. We know that providers don't speak to individuals about alcohol use as much as they should, even though the evidence supports regular conversations and has shown that brief interventions can be effective at reducing at-risk drinking. So the Lunder Dineen Health Education Alliance of Maine convened key stakeholders and experts from across the state. They conducted a needs assessment with providers at several pilot sites to try to understand what are the provider and practice needs that could help support more regular conversations and screening for alcohol use in primary care settings. We've done a lot of data collection to try to really meet the unique needs of Maine providers, and from that information, they've developed a three-pronged program that uses practice facilitation, expert consultation, and then education for providers. So those three pillars, the practice facilitation is aimed at working with practices to integrate screening and brief intervention into practice workflows. So we know providers can't do things if they don't have their organizational support, right? Offering expert consultation to providers for ongoing challenges with managing this patient population. And then an education component that helps build knowledge and clinical skills so that primary care providers are more comfortable in engaging in screening and brief intervention in primary care settings. So it's really a multi-pronged approach that's rooted in the evidence of the field and tailored to meet the needs of providers in Maine.
Why do you think that providers are are not asking about alcohol use? Is it because it's just was never really done, or is it because we're learning more now through medical research that the effects that alcohol has on a body?
I think there are multiple factors that contribute. I think one is that we're learning more about the effects of alcohol on the body, including low-dose alcohol. But I think also there's a hesitation among providers sometimes about asking, because some providers might think that there aren't options to help patients if they do identify a problem, or maybe, on the other hand, a provider might be struggling with a problem themselves, and so they may be less willing to bring it up with their patient. So I think there are multiple factors that could be contributing.
Let me suggest a somewhat more pessimistic take on this.
Oh, please do.
I'm going to unfortunately suggest that not only older adults themselves, but healthcare professionals have a pretty nihilistic or hopeless view on issues like this. And the result is that we enable almost. We allow older adults to practice, you know, have bad habits and not press hard enough to correct them because of a rather hopeless mentality that people are advanced in age. And it might be too late to help them, you know, break those bad habits.
Do you think that that results in, if they, it won't matter? So if they're of advanced age and they're drinking too much, if they stop drinking, they won't see health benefits from that?
Yeah, I think that's part of it, a sense of hopelessness that folks can improve their well-being and live well into the future. So It's an ageist, I think, problem that keeps all of us from addressing it and pretty much sweeping it under the rug much more frequently than we should.
And alcoholism or drinking too much can have a stigma. So do you think that people are less likely to self-report? I mean, we all probably lie to our physicians to some degree about our behaviors if they're not following doctor's orders specifically. Does that play a factor?
Oh, I think it does. We know for a fact that, you know, some 16 million Americans have alcohol use disorder, but only 1 in 10 actually end up seeking treatment, only 10%. We also know that only 1 in 5 consumers of alcohol even choose to discuss it with their physicians. So there's embarrassment. There may be a lack of trust, because that relationship between physician and patient is not an open and honest one.
And Stephanie, let's talk about it from a pharmaceutical standpoint, that alcohol and drug use, you know, prescriptions that don't mix with alcohol, and yet maybe they are.
Yeah, so many, many drug interactions are concerning when medications are mixed with alcohol. Some of them can be very overt. So, for example, some antibiotics, and a specific antibiotic, metronidazole, can interact with alcohol and make people acutely ill, very nauseous, vomiting, flushed, and other very physical symptoms. Other antibiotics can interact with alcohol via reduced efficacy of them, so they may not work as well to treat the infection. Many drugs that work in the brain interact with alcohol, so antidepressants interact with alcohol by alcohol making them also work less effectively. Some antidepressants are sedating, and so they can have additive effects with alcohol. Same thing with anxiolytics, so specifically medications like benzodiazepines have many additive and synergistic effects with alcohol that can contribute to excessive sedation and sleepiness, but also things like increased risk of falling or even motor vehicle accidents. One of the most concerning drugs or types of drugs that interact with alcohol are opioids, so pain medications, opioid analgesics. These interact with alcohol in that alcohol further exacerbates the respiratory depressive effects of opioids and can make it more likely for somebody to have an acute overdose, even with just routine medical prescribed as, you know, used as prescribed opioid use, alcohol can have that effect. And then the last one that I want to mention is warfarin and other anticoagulants. So drugs like Coumadin, warfarin, even some of the newer anticoagulant agents also can interact with alcohol, sometimes via changes in how they work, but also they all interact in adding the risk of bleeding. So many, many medications have drug interactions with alcohol.
And a lot of these medications are fairly typical for seniors to take. Go ahead.
Oh, and I was just going to add, and of course, we know that many seniors are on many, many medications. So generally, it's not uncommon at all for a senior to be on 10, maybe 12, even 15 medications at a time. So chances are good that one, if not, you know, five or more of those medications may interact with alcohol in any given senior.
I know it says on the bottle, don't mix with alcohol, but is there any education surrounding what that really means? Because people may not think, they may not think of beer as really being alcohol.
Right. I don't know of any formal education to patients around that specific subject, but I would encourage anyone to reach out and get to know their local pharmacist. A pharmacist, I'm a little bit biased because I'm also a pharmacist, but I believe a pharmacist is a very underutilized resource in the community, and we really do want to help. So if we have an individual patient with their individual medication list in front of us, we can really help educate that person about specific drug interactions with drugs as well as substances, including alcohol. So I would encourage seniors to reach out and get to know their pharmacist and ask them those questions related to their specific medication list.
I would remind listeners that pharmacists and physicians are two of the most trusted healthcare professionals available to them. Take advantage of those relationships and share with them your concerns.
When we come back, we will talk more about Time to Ask and alcohol and seniors, so stay with us. If you'd like to hear this show again, listen to it in podcast form at WVOMFM.com. There's much more to come, so stay with us. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk. When we left, we were talking about physicians and the education surrounding medication. So, Stephanie, if a physician is prescribing a medication, would they really get into it, or would they, that this should not be mixed with any alcohol at all? And would that be a segue to how much are you really drinking, because it could be very detrimental? Or is that part of the training that Lunda Dineen is doing?
Yeah, so I think both. I think it is a great opportunity for the physician, or even more broadly, the prescriber, right, including NPs and PAs, for the prescriber to introduce the conversation about alcohol. I want to prescribe this medication for you, but it can have very life-threatening interactions with alcohol of any level, and so it's really important that we have an honest discussion about drinking, just to make sure that we're doing the safest treatment with you, you know, for you and with you, as part of shared decision-making. And then also, yes, as part of our training with Lunda Dineen, we will start discussing in our in-person training medication interactions with alcohol and the nitty-gritty specifics of which medications will interact with alcohol and in which way, so that providers themselves are equipped to educate patients about the specifics of the questions they may receive.
Do you think this will bring patients forward more to be more honest with their provider about how much they drink if they fully understand what the health ramifications could be of an interaction?
I think so. I think people want to be healthy, and they want what they perceive is best for their body. And I think if people are educated with honest information and all of the information that they need to make an appropriate decision, I think that people will be more likely to be more forthcoming with their use, especially with someone, again, that they trust, such as their physician.
I'm actually optimistic that into the future there's going to be more open communication between physicians and their patients. And I'm thinking in particular about the enormously rapidly growing numbers of baby boomers, folks born between 1946 and 1964, who are much more honest, upfront, and I think able to engage in open forthcoming discussion with their physicians. So I think the future is relatively bright in terms of the willingness of older patients to be very upfront and honest with their healthcare professionals. And with programs like Time to Ask, I think that the future is bright too in terms of the likelihood that healthcare professionals are going to be raising these issues.
Let's talk about what constitutes a drink, because people will say one drink a day. And we've all heard the joke, I only have one glass of wine a day, but the glass is 24 ounces. So let's talk about what that really means when someone may be saying, I only have one beer, but it's really about the ounces, not about the container that it comes in. So I'm throwing that out there to whoever wants to break that down for me.
Well, it is about the ounces, and so an average beer is 12 ounces, and that's going to be equated with approximately a 5-ounce glass of wine, which is equal then to approximately 1.5 ounces of hard alcohol. So if your glass of wine gets overfilled, realize that you're having at that one drink represents more than a single serving of wine.
And the honesty that goes along with that. And so what about people who say, well, I don't really drink, I just drink beer?
Beer is an alcohol, and it has anywhere from 5 to 7 or 8% alcohol content. And don't kid yourself. Drinking too many beers is just as harmful as drinking too many glasses of wine or shots of Jack Daniels.
And what about the microbrews? So they're everywhere now. Everyone's brewing these wonderful beers, but they're a lot higher potentially in alcohol content. Is that right?
They can be.
Yeah.
They can be. And so the point is, moderate your drinking. I think we're not wanting to send the message necessarily that you abstain completely unless you choose to, but drink in moderation.
And really think about it. I wonder how many people think about how much they're drinking if they go to a wine tasting and you get an ounce or whatever to taste it, but then you have 10. So, and try all these different wines, and now it's more alcohol than maybe, oh, it's just a wine tasting and it may not be counted. I feel like there may be this secret consumption where people aren't even counting for themselves.
And I think that's a good point. And I think, sorry to jump in, but along those lines, I think some people also are under the impression that if they spit it out, that they're not absorbing any of the alcohol.
But
you
can
still absorb alcohol. Yeah, I know, right? But yeah, so some people will go to tasting and then spit out their alcohol to try not ingest it. But they may not understand that some alcohol is absorbed via the mucosal membranes, even in the mouth. So some alcohol is even being absorbed once it enters that mouth.
Well, that's good to know.
There's, in clinical work in the past, I've asked patients to go back and really measure what they're classifying as their standard drink, and people are really surprised by that.
Yep.
So it's trying to be a little bit more mindful of what you're consuming.
That's an excellent point. There's nothing like a measuring cup. It's a dose of reality. When we come back, we will talk about how alcohol affects an older body. Stay with us. Hi, Rebecca, Senior Talk. So, Lindsay, when we left, I promised that we would talk about the effects of alcohol on an older body. So when someone's 40 and they're drinking a certain amount of alcohol, and it may or may not be fine, but as they age and now they're 70, so the 2 beers that they have a day or 3 beers they have a day, it changes as the bodies change. Can you delve into that for me?
Sure. So I think there's a lot of physiological changes that happen as we age, particularly in women, related to body fat, absorption, and you couple that with multiple chronic conditions, and as we talked about earlier, polypharmacy, your body's not metabolizing alcohol in the same way that it did in the past. So, you know, we're all creatures of habit, so people tend to drink as they have throughout their life. But as we age, we need to consider what is unhealthy drinking in the confounds of chronic conditions and medications and the physiological changes that occur as we age that inhibit our ability to process alcohol at the same rate as when we were younger.
And there is that.
I think Stephanie touched on some of you know, the impacts related to alcohol exacerbating existing conditions, as well as medications potentially interacting that can either impact health-related quality of life or just health in general.
And don't forget that excessive drinking can negatively influence your ability to coordinate your body movements. It can lead to balance issues. It increases your risk of falling. It can worsen existing medical conditions like diabetes and liver conditions and your blood pressure, and it can wreak havoc with your mental health, your levels of anxiety and potentially depression as well.
Do you think there's a lack of understanding among patients and seniors about how serious alcohol is and the effects that it has on the body, or do they just slough it off, I'm only having a few drinks?
Societal pressure has great influence, and when you see commercials celebrating good times with what appears to be excessive drinking, no doubt that makes it more difficult to appreciate or understand the negative influences that alcohol can have.
And if someone's used to having that cocktail, that pre-dinner cocktail that they've been having, it's difficult to change that behavior when two cocktails might have been fine before, now maybe it isn't, or drinking beer during a football game or doing any of that, where the body changes so much and taking meds into account. Len, I want to get into, while we still have time, caregiving. What should caregivers do for their seniors or older loved ones?
I mentioned earlier that physicians and pharmacists are highly trusted individuals in an older adult's life. Well, caregivers are too, that meaning family, friends, and neighbors. And I think all three groups of individuals can have a major impact in terms of helping older adults deal with the challenges surrounding the potential for excessive drinking. You need to be first and foremost willing to discuss it. This is a sensitive issue, yet caregivers need to step up and take responsibility, and if they truly love that elder, be willing to talk about it.
That is going to be a rough conversation, but clearly very necessary. Is there a time they should talk to the person's physician and give a heads up?
There should be, and frequently accompanying that elder to an appointment would be the time and place in which to do that.
Thank you all so much. This is such important information. Len Kay, Stephanie Nichols, Lindsay Smith, it's been a pleasure. That's it for me. This is Senior Talk. Thanks so much for listening.